Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. You are listening to PGN Prophetic Grace Network, and this is Secrets Revealed, Understand the Book of Revelation from Start to Finish with me, Dr. Nicole, your Book of Revelation research scientist. It is Sunday, June 5th, 2022. We are in the 2 a.m. hour in Beijing, China, 3 a.m. hour in Tokyo, Japan. It is about 5 a.m. in Sydney, Australia, 10 a.m. in Vancouver, Canada, 12 p.m. in Garland, Texas, 6 p.m. in both Lagos, Nigeria, and London, England. We're in the 7 o'clock hour in Berlin, Germany, the 8 o'clock p.m. hour in Israel, and it is just after 9 p.m. in Moscow, Russia. What time is it where you are? Please text me to let me know that you are listening and that you are with us. I'm so excited about our time today. I have many interesting and exciting things to share with you. Let me begin with sharing our phone number and our text number. If you want to call in, our PGN phone number is 1-319-527-6027. So PGN is on 7 days a week usually. And for each show, whether you're listening to me, Dr. Nicole, or Randy, or Carmen, or Felicia, or Terrence and Tanisha, the phone number to reach when we are live broadcasting on Blog Talk, the phone number to reach us at is always 1-319-527-6027. You can use that phone number to call and listening. Maybe you're driving in your car or you're out and about, or maybe you're in the house. You can call that phone number just to listen to the show. You don't have to connect via internet. You can call and listen. You can also call in to raise your hand. When you call, you just press 1. And when you press 1, you'll hear an automated message say, you are now in the host queue. And that's letting you know that your hand appears raised on our side when we're looking at the technology to let the show go live. And when you raise your hand, that communicates that you would like to talk. And in this case, for the Secrets Revealed, Understand the Book of Revelation from Start to Finish broadcast, I am taking your live calls about the Book of Revelation. I encourage you to share your perspective, to pose a question, to pose a thought for us to consider. And of course, and always, the main thing that we are about at PGN is personal one-on-one ministry. So if you would like prayer for yourself, for a loved one, please call. I'm always excited and grateful for the opportunity and the honor to pray with you and for you. So you can call at 1-319-527-6027. You can also text at 1-214-505-8719. So you can text to let me know that you're listening and what time it is and where you are. Maybe you're listening from Paris or from Amsterdam or from Mexico or from Texas or New York. I'm not sure where you are, but I'd love to know that you are with us live and that you are participating in our talk today. Again, our PGN text phone number is 1-214-505-8719. You can always text live during the show with a prayer request, a comment, or a question, and you can text your question for me, Dr. Nicole, your Book of Revelation research scientist, 24/7. So maybe you think of a question later today or during the week, and maybe you say, you know, I want to know more about the Great Tribulation, and I have this question. How long is the Great Tribulation, or when is the millennial reign, or do you have a thought about who the Antichrist is, or I could keep going or whatever your question is, I'm really excited to receive it and to answer it. There's so many questions. Some questions I know the answer to because I've been studying the book of Revelation. God has shown me certain things. I've been praying. And then there are other questions that I don't know the answer to. Part of my work as your book of Revelation research scientist is to study and find answers in the Bible about important questions. So, again, I'm excited to receive your questions today. I am focused on sharing with you information from the New Earth Prophecy. That's what we are talking about today, the New Earth Prophecy. There are 10 statements of prophecy in the book of Revelation, starting with the first statement of prophecy and ending with the last one. I want to share with you briefly using words from the Bible contained in each statement of prophecy. I want to share with you the names of the statements of prophecy. Again, using words from the Bible and in each statement of prophecy itself, we can think of the statements of prophecy as having these names. The first statement of prophecy in the book of Revelation is the seven seals prophecy. The second statement of prophecy in the book of Revelation is the seven trumpets prophecy. The third is the 1,260 days prophecy. The fourth statement of prophecy is the dragon power prophecy. The fifth statement of prophecy is the lamb stood. The sixth statement of prophecy is the seven plagues prophecy. The seventh statement of prophecy is the omnipotent reigns prophecy. The eighth statement of prophecy is the dragon bound prophecy. The ninth statement of prophecy is the dead judged prophecy. And the tenth and final statement of prophecy in the book of Revelation is the New Earth Prophecy. So today, and for every Secrets Revealed, Understand the Book of Revelation from Start to Finish program in the month of June, I'll be sharing new information, answering additional questions, sharing new insights on the New Earth Prophecy, which is the 10th statement of prophecy in the book of Revelation. So part of understanding the book of Revelation is knowing how it is organized. So if you were to go to a new state, for example, let's say you said, I want to visit Montana. I've never been to Montana. A thing that you might do is get a map, and not only would you likely get the map, but you might study the map so that no matter where you are in Montana, you know the lay of the land, you have a perspective of your location relative to other locations in that state. And maybe you're listening from another country and you say, Montana, I've never heard of Montana. So here in the USA, where I'm broadcasting from, there are many states. Montana is one of 50 states in America, and it is a large state, not heavily populated, but it's one of our largest states, and it has several cities and many towns. So similarly, the book of Revelation has many locations. There are many things in the book of Revelation, just like there are many towns and several cities in the state of Montana. Let me share with you what exists in this location that we're talking about, specifically the book of Revelation, which is the last book in the Bible, the last book in the New Testament. The book of Revelation has six key components. As I look at it from a professional writing perspective, wanting to understand, okay, what's in this and how is it organized, I see six locations. The largest city, if you will, in the book of Revelation is the part that includes the statements of prophecy. So as I shared with you at the beginning of our time today, there are 10 statements of prophecy. What exists, if we're looking from start to finish, what exists before those statements of prophecy and what exists after? So from the beginning, in chapter 1 of the book of Revelation, there is an abstract. So that's the first location in the book of Revelation. The abstract is a movie trailer. It is a movie trailer in words for the book of Revelation in its entirety. So there are 22 chapters in the book of Revelation, but if you wanted to know what are the highlights, what are the key conflicts and issues, who are the key actors, players, individuals, groups in the book of Revelation, that's shared from the perspective of the writer in its movie trailer, in its abstract. So the first key location in the book of Revelation is the summary, the abstract of the book, and that's in chapter 1 of the book of Revelation. It includes verses 1 to 8. The second key location in the book of Revelation is a formal introduction. The formal introduction picks up with verse 9. Immediately after the movie trailer, we go into the details of the book. And so we get a formal introduction to the book of Revelation. It is narrated primarily by John, but also Jesus shares some specific information as well. So we have narration from Jesus and primarily from the Apostle John, beginning with verse 9 and ending with verse 20 in chapter 1. So we have two key locations so far talking about the book of Revelation. We know that there's an abstract, which is essentially a movie trailer in words. We have a formal introduction. The third location follows the formal introduction, and it includes the testimony of Jesus Christ, the words of Jesus Christ verbatim. So Jesus has some specific words that he wants to communicate to the seven churches that existed at the time that the book of Revelation was penned, in other words, at the time that it was written down. And John transcribed those words verbatim, so there are no words from John or other individuals in the transcribed words of Jesus Christ for the seven churches in Asia. So the spoken words of Jesus Christ begin with verse 1 of chapter 2 and end with verse 22. So those words I've shared with them on other talks. So it's not the focus of our discussion for today, but the key point, we want to know what are all the locations, what are all the elements in this book of Revelation. So that's the third one, the transcribed words of Jesus Christ for the seven churches. Number 4, the fourth location, is John's report on heaven. So John was caught up to heaven, and when he was in heaven, there were things that he saw with his own eyes. And so he shares with us what he saw in the physical location that exists today, heaven. And so if you're curious about what's in heaven, what does it look like, who's there, obviously John doesn't tell us everything that he probably saw in heaven, or for sure not everything that exists in heaven, but he does give his own account, his own report of what he personally saw when he was caught up, when he was called to come up to heaven. And so that fourth location, John's report on heaven, is chapter 4 in its entirety. So chapter 4 is one of 22 chapters in the book of Revelation. So thinking about the analogy of Montana, there are a lot of small towns, and then there are a few major cities. I would say John's report is analogous to a small town. It's just one chapter, but an exciting chapter, an important chapter. I encourage you to look at it if you haven't had a chance to look at it. That's chapter 4 of the book of Revelation. Now, let's talk about the fifth location, the major city, the largest city in the book of Revelation. In other words, what is the bulk of Revelation if we were to give percentages with respect to number of words? The largest portion of the book of Revelation by far are the statements of prophecy. I shared with you at the beginning of our time today that there are 10 statements of prophecy in the book of Revelation. They pick up immediately following John's report of heaven. So they begin with verse 1 of chapter 5 and end with verse 5 of chapter 22. There are 10 statements of prophecy, and they appear sequentially, one after the other, beginning with verse 1 of chapter 5. Today, we're going to focus on the New Earth prophecy, and I want to share with you some of the key issues that are discussed in this New Earth statement of prophecy, the Lamb's Book of Life, the Second Death, the former order of things, names on our foreheads, the eternities of eternities, no more night, the restoration of the nations, the abode of God. These topics and more are discussed in that statement of prophecy. So again, the largest city, staying with the metaphor of a state and physical location, if we're opening up the book of Revelation and we just let it go to any page, we need to know, where are we? What part of the book of Revelation are we in? And so if you're in chapter 5, anywhere in chapter 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, if you're in any of those chapters, then you know that you're in a statement of prophecy. And so the next question to ask yourself is, which statement of prophecy is this? And you need to know that because each statement of prophecy has a set of themes. Each statement of prophecy has its own movie trailer, its own abstract, and then followed by the movie trailer, there's the movie in its entirety. In other words, the statement of prophecy, continued discussion and elaboration. So again, getting the lay of the land, if you're anywhere between chapter 5 and chapter 21 of the book of Revelation, you're in a specific statement of prophecy. And also, if you're between verses 1 and 5 of chapter 22, you're in the last part of the last statement of prophecy, the New Earth prophecy. Okay, so we've discussed 5 locations in the book of Revelation, and the final location in the book of Revelation is its formal conclusion. So I shared that the second location in the book of Revelation, if we're just looking from start to finish, starting with chapter 1, verse 1, the second location is the formal introduction, which is narrated primarily by John, but also Jesus shares some in verse 11. For example, Jesus says, saying, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last. Write promptly what you see, your vision in a book, and send it to the 7 churches which are in Asia, to Ephesus and to Smyrna and to Pergamum and to Thyatira and to Sardis and to Philadelphia and to Laodicea. Jesus shares more also in verses 18 to 20 in the formal introduction. Those verses are, and actually it starts with the last half of verse 17. He says, do not be afraid. And he's talking to John here. Do not be afraid. I am the first and the last and the ever-living one. I am the living in the eternity of the eternities. I died, but see, I am alive forever. Evermore, and I possess the keys of death in Hades, the realm of the dead. Write, therefore, the things you see, what they are and signify, and what is to take place hereafter. As to the hidden meaning, the mystery of the 7 stars, which you saw on my right hand, and the 7 lampstands of gold, the 7 stars are the 7 angels, messengers of the 7 assemblies, churches, and the 7 lampstands are the 7 churches. So what's the key point? In the book of Revelation, there are 6 locations in the introduction, which is the second location if you're looking from start to finish, there's a formal introduction, which is narrated primarily by John, but also Jesus has some specific words that are recorded for us, the reader. The last location in the book of Revelation is a formal conclusion. So we have a formal introduction, and we have a formal conclusion, just like the introduction, which is narrated by both the Apostle John and Jesus Christ himself. The formal conclusion is similarly written. The narrators are both the Apostle John and Jesus Christ himself, with the Apostle John being the primary narrator. So if you're in the last chapter of the book of Revelation, and you say, okay, well, what am I looking at? If you're anywhere between verses 6 and verse 21, verses 6 and 21, then you're in the formal conclusion. So if you open the book of Revelation, there are six locations that you might find yourself in. The first location is the movie trailer for the book in its entirety. So that thing is moving fast, right? A lot of information is excluded, and only key information, key issues, highlights are included in the movie trailer, the abstract. If you're in the formal introduction for the book, you have some information, you're at the beginning. If you are in the spoken words of Jesus Christ for the seven churches, you're in the part of the book of Revelation where only Jesus is talking, and he has specific words of correction for churches that existed at that time. So there are things that we can learn, but those words of correction may or may not apply to the church that you belong to or the church that I belong to, right? Those were seven churches that existed in approximately 95 AD. I said 95 AD because that's when we believe the book of Revelation is penned. But those churches, I imagine, existed before then. If you open the book of Revelation in chapter 4, you're in the part of the book that's John's report on heaven. So if you're at that location, you know what you're looking at is what John saw when he was actually caught up to heaven. For example, in verse 6 of chapter 4, John says, "And in front of the throne, there was also what looked like a transparent glassy sea, as if of crystal. And around the throne, in the center at each side of the throne, were four living creatures, beings, who were full of eyes in front and behind, with intelligence as to what is before and at the rear of them." And then he continues. Every verse in chapter 4 is about John's experience in heaven. It is his personal report to us, for us, readers of the book of Revelation. Again, and importantly, in the book of Revelation, if you are anywhere between verse 1 of chapter 5 and verse 5 of chapter 22, you are in a statement of prophecy. This is the bulk of the book of Revelation. The vast majority of the book is comprised of statements of prophecy. Today, I will be sharing with you about the New Earth prophecy. I want to share with you some about what John tells us about the statements of prophecy in the book of Revelation. In verse 6 of chapter 22, talking about the statements of prophecy, this is what John says. In verse 6 of chapter 22, this is the first verse of the formal conclusion of the book. John says, "And he of the seven angels further said to me, these statements are reliable, worthy of confidence, and genuine true. And the Lord, the God of the spirits of the prophets, has sent his messenger angel to make known and exhibit to his servants what must soon come to pass." Importantly, John says to us again, in verse 6 of chapter 22, it says in part, these statements are reliable, worthy of confidence, and genuine, true. What statements? The statements of prophecy. What else does John tell us about the statements of prophecy? In verse 18 of chapter 22, John says to us, readers of the book of Revelation, I personally, solemnly warn everyone who listens to the statements of the prophecy, the predictions and the consolations and admonitions pertaining to them in this book. If anyone shall add anything to them, God will add and lay upon him the plagues, the afflictions, and the calamities that are recorded and described in this book. The most important thing from my perspective is that John communicates to us that these are statements of the prophecy. And by my analysis, there are 10 statements of prophecy. They begin with verse 1 of chapter 5, and they end with verse 5 of chapter 22. And so another important thing that we learn from verse 18 of chapter 22 is what exactly is a statement of prophecy. So a statement of prophecy may include up to three things, and at a minimum, one of these three things: a prediction, a consolation, and an admonition. So depending on which statement of prophecy we're looking at, it has some number of these things. So a prediction is a forecast of events that will happen in the future. Most predictions are based on an analysis by a subject matter expert. In the case of the book of Revelation, we have the best prediction that has ever and will ever exist. That's a prediction from the person who knows the end from the beginning. These predictions, again, are reliable, worthy of confidence, and genuine, true. So you say, how can a prediction be genuine and true? How can it be reliable and worthy of confidence? If you personally had the ability to travel in time, to the future, and then to come back to the present and communicate to us what you saw in the future, that would be an accurate prediction, because in reality, you weren't sharing a prediction based on your analysis, you would be sharing a prediction based on the reality that exists in our future. In the same way, we have something better than a time machine. We have the Alpha and the Omega. In verse 8 of chapter 1, it says, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, says the Lord God, he who is and who was and who is to come, the Almighty, the ruler of all. So God knows the end from the beginning, and being compassionate, being loving, his goal is for every person, that includes you, friend, and that includes me, to become a member of the royal race, to inherit the new earth, which we'll be talking about today. And so to facilitate this desire, this goal that God has to restore every son, every daughter to the inheritance that he has promised, to restore us to sonship, he gives us predictions which are reliable and true, so that we don't have to wonder what's in the future. Will there ever be a time of true peace? Is this war in the Ukraine ever going to end? Will there ever come a time where there's truly peace on the earth? These questions and more are answered in the book of Revelation. So they're included in the predictions. What else? Consolations. So some statements of prophecy, not all, have consolations. A consolation includes words of hope in the context of negative or distressing events. Part of the value of the book of Revelation is that it communicates to us facts about distressing events that will happen in our future. Now, when John wrote this book, all of the prophecies were in the future relative to the time at which he penned the book, approximately 95 AD. But some of those distressing events have already happened. Relative to our time today, in 2022, there's still many distressing events to come. In the book of Revelation, we're told that the time is coming where things will be brought to a crisis. You say, well, what's a crisis? It seems like the world is always in a crisis. Agreed. My perception is that the crisis that the book of Revelation is talking about is the 1,260 days. So in that 1,260 days statement of prophecy, which I will be talking about in detail in a future talk, that 1,260 days prophecy is all about the Great Tribulation. That is going to be a very difficult time on the earth for those of us who are here at that time. Another difficult time, that's discussed, by the way, in chapter 12 of the book of Revelation. Also, another time of great crises, World War III. There is coming a war, and in that war, there will be troops. Think about the coronavirus for a second. That has been very hard. I think that for most of us in the world, we have been touched by calamities and even death within our families or in our communities. People who suffered and people who ultimately experienced the first death as a result of coronavirus. So, thinking about those numbers, and I don't have them in front of me. If you happen to have those numbers in front of you, would you text me that so that I can share it live? So thinking about the coronavirus, that's been very hard for lots of reasons that are known to you and to me. Imagine talking about a time of crisis and great crises. Imagine what the experience will be for individuals when a third of mankind perishes. The emotional distress, the physical devastation, and the psychological devastation that will no doubt happen. And when you say, well, Dr. Nicole, how can you say that that will no doubt happen? Every prophecy in the book of Revelation is reliable, worthy of confidence, genuine, and true. In chapter 9 of the book of Revelation, in the seven trumpets prophecy, God communicates to us that there will be a war. Now, this will not be the war to end all wars, but there will be a great war. I'm using the language World War III because sometimes that has been used in describing this particular war noted in chapter 9 of the book of Revelation. The key point is that in this war, it says a third of mankind will be destroyed. Let me read that verse for you. Verse 18 in chapter 9, it says, a third of mankind was killed by these three plagues, by the fire and the smoke and the sulfur brimstone that poured from the mouths of the horses. For the power of the horses to do harm is in their mouths and also in their tails. Their tails are like serpents, for they have heads, and it is by means of them that they wound people. And then in verse 20, it says, and the rest of humanity who were not killed by these plagues, even then did not repent of the worship of the works of their own hands, so as to cease paying homage to the demons and idols of gold and silver and bronze and stone and wood, which can neither see nor hear nor move. Okay, so I was using that as an example to communicate that the book of Revelation talks about the reality of things being brought to a time of great crises, in the world, and that a statement of prophecy includes at a minimum one of three things. We learned that in verse 18 of chapter 22. Statements of prophecy include a prediction and or a consolation and or an admonition. So these consolations, these are words of hope provided in the context of a report of distressing events, negative events, difficult events, in fact, crises. So in God's compassion and in his wisdom and from an abundance of love, he communicates to us in advance crises, what his response will be to the crises, and words of consolation. The third thing that we see in some statements of prophecy are admonitions. So an admonition is a warning. And so it says, John says to us in verse 18, I personally solemnly warn everyone who listens to the statements of the prophecy, the predictions and the consolations and admonitions pertaining to them. So in the prophecy that we will talk about today, the New Earth prophecy, the 10th and final statement of prophecy in the book of Revelation, there are predictions that we will hear. There are consolations and there are admonitions. So there are warnings for you and for me, readers of the book of Revelation. So this is a wonderful, fantastic, and exciting statement of prophecy. It is the culmination of the book of Revelation in the sense that it is the final statement of prophecy of 10 statements of prophecy. I want to share it with you now. I will be reading from the Amplified Classic Translation of the Bible. And the New Earth prophecy begins with verse 1 of chapter 21, and it ends with verse 5 of chapter 22. There are several key themes discussed in the New Earth prophecy. The first thing I want to do is share with you the movie trailer for the statement of prophecy. So every statement of prophecy has a movie trailer. When I say little, I don't mean little in importance. I mean a relatively short presentation from the perspective of the writer, and it's followed by the movie in its entirety. So that's why sometimes when you're in a statement of prophecy, something was discussed, and then it goes on, and then you're like, wait a minute, this was discussed many verses ago. How are we back to that same thing? So you need to know where the movie trailer is so that you know whether you're in the movie trailer or the movie in its entirety. If we watched a movie trailer of Tom Cruise's new movie, and then we went to see the movie itself, there would be parts in that new Top Gun movie that we've already seen, and we've already seen them before because we saw the movie trailer. It's the same thing in the book of Revelation. If you are in a statement of prophecy and you're in the abstract, that same information, once you go into the continued discussion of that statement of prophecy, you will see that content again. So let's take a look first at the movie trailer for the New Earth prophecy. It includes verses 1 and 2 of chapter 21. Then I saw a new sky, heaven, and a new earth, for the former sky and the former earth had passed away, vanished, and there no longer existed any sea. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, all arrayed like a bride, beautified and adorned for her husband. End quote. So we see that from the perspective of the writer, several key themes. Number one, there will be a new heaven, a new earth. Number two, there will be a holy city, which is Jerusalem, but a new Jerusalem. Number three, that new Jerusalem descends out of heaven. Number four, it descends out of heaven from God, who at that time is in heaven. Number five, the new Jerusalem, this city is beautiful and it's arrayed in, like, what is it? If you think about a city, how could you describe a city that's really, really, really beautiful? If you were a fantastic writer, you might describe it like this. The city was so beautiful that it was all arrayed like a bride, beautified and adorned for her husband. So when you think about a woman and the most beautiful that a woman will ever look, that time is probably at her wedding. Why? Generally, now not always, but generally women spend a lot of time figuring out what hairstyle they're going to have, what kind of makeup, if any, they're going to wear, what their dress will look like, what accessories they will have. Will they wear earrings or perhaps a tiara or a bracelet, maybe a hidden anklet, maybe their jewels in the back of her hair. Maybe there's a special design on her hands. We could go on and on. But if you were trying to communicate about what a city would look like, and you wanted to share that this city is beautiful, this city is beyond New York City, it's beyond London, it's beyond Zurich, it's beyond Geneva. I'm listing cities that people tend to talk about as being amazing. It's beyond, and please text me if you have a favorite city on our current earth and you say, this is the most beautiful city I've ever been in. I'm curious to know what city is most beautiful from your perspective, but my take-home point is, the writer is attempting to communicate to us how beautiful this new city, I'm saying this new city, I mean to say this holy city, the New Jerusalem, is. Now, it makes sense. This city exists in heaven, but it is relocated. It actually descends from heaven in the same way that Jesus Christ, when he returns for the second coming, the battle of Armageddon, the rapture, he descends from the clouds. He descends from heaven and then from the clouds. In the same way, this city, it tells us, descends out of heaven. And who sends the city? Who is in charge of it descending out of heaven? It tells us it descends out of heaven from God. And it's not just a city like, you know, Washington, D.C., which I think that's I was born in Washington, D.C. I think it's a beautiful city. I think New York is a beautiful city. I haven't been to London, but it appears to be a beautiful city. I mean, we could go on and on. But this city is perhaps the most beautiful city of all time. It doesn't tell us that, but it tells us that this city is beautified and adorned like a bride. So take home point, those are the five things that are very important. They represent the movie trailer about the New Earth prophecy. Now, we know from the perspective of the writer, the most important issues that are discussed in this movie, in other words, this statement of prophecy, this New Earth prophecy, now that we have an understanding of the key issues, let's hear the movie in its entirety, the continued discussion part of the New Earth prophecy. There will be a lot more that's shared, right? We're going from the movie trailer to the movie, but there will be repetition. So at a certain point, we're going to hear again about the New Jerusalem. At a certain point, we're going to hear again about the new earth and the new sky, but there will be other information that's communicated too. Okay, I'm picking up with the continued discussion, the movie, the statement of prophecy beyond the abstract for the new earth. So beginning with verse 3 of chapter 21, it says, reading from the Amplified Classic Translation, then I heard a mighty voice from the throne, and I perceived its distinct words, saying, see, the abode of God is with men, and he will live in camp tent among them, and they shall be his people, and God shall personally be with them and be their God. God will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be anguish, sorrow, and mourning, nor grief, nor pain any more, for the old conditions and the former order of things have passed away. And he who is seated on the throne said, see, I make all things new. Also he said, record this, for these sayings are faithful, accurate, incorruptible, and trustworthy, and true, genuine. I want to pause there and share some about what we just heard. Let's not miss these exciting predictions, these exciting truths that exist in our future. We learned in verse 3 that the abode of God in the future is with men. In other words, it's with human beings. Now, where is that going to be? That's going to be on the new earth. We'll see that later in the statement of prophecy. So right now, God's abode is in heaven, but it tells us the abode of God is with men. He will live among them, and they shall be his people, and God shall personally be with them. How many times have you wished that God was personally with you? In other words, that you could see God and that you could talk to God face to face. There's more that's going to be shared in this prophecy about that. So God is going to personally be with his sons and daughters on the new earth. It says in verse 4, death shall be no more. In the statement of prophecy, the dead judged prophecy that precedes this one, that was the focus of every talk in the month of May. If you didn't have a chance to listen, maybe this is, you're a first-time listener and you didn't have a chance to listen, in the month of May, I encourage you to go into our PGN archive. You can do that on blogtalkradio.com. You can do that on from the Apple Podcasts, the Google Podcasts, the Podcast Addict website. I think there's another. You can look for Secrets Revealed, and for all of the programs in the month of May, each program I share something new, many truths about this death shall be no more. There's lots of scripture about death, and in 1 Corinthians we learn that death is the last enemy to be subdued and abolished. Well, what does that mean? When you abolish something, it doesn't exist anymore. And in the dead judged prophecy, we learn how Jesus Christ did that. He did that in two parts. The first thing he did was he obtained the keys to death and Hades. And then in the dead judged prophecy, we see specifically in our future at the great white throne judgment, many things will be put to death, but the important thing, the most important thing from my perspective, but you be the judge of it from your perspective, is that Jesus Christ throws into the lake of fire death itself. So what does that mean? That means that death shall be no more. The second death, which is the fiery lake that burns with brimstone forever and ever, that is a permanent death. The first death is temporary. It's a pseudo-death, if you will, because every person, with the exception of the Antichrist and false prophet, as described in chapter 19 of Book of Revelation, every other person will be restored to life again. Every person who has this mortal body fail. In other words, the body dies. The body undergoes putrefaction. Friend, There is perfect continuity of life for you and for me upon the experience of the first death. You are three parts. I am three parts, body, spirit, and soul. For an individual who experiences the first death, that person immediately goes, if the person is a believer, to the physical location known as heaven, with the person's soul completely intact, the person's spirit completely intact, the person is simply disembodied but continues to exist, the soul, mind, will, and emotions, and the spirit. Similarly, a person who experiences the first death but who is not in Christ has perfect continuity of life in a disembodied state in the location known as Hades. What this means is that with that continuity of life beyond that state of existing in heaven or existing in Hades, the person is restored to life again, either at time one, that's the time of the rapture, or time two, that's the time of the dead judged prophecy. The take-home point for us looking at this new earth prophecy is that this current order of things where a person can experience death, where a tree can die, where an animal, but how many pets have you had or known that you just loved, and how heartbreaking it is to lose a pet that you love. You want that pet to exist forever. On the new earth, there will be animals. And you might say, Dr. Nicole, will there be dogs or cats? I don't know. I don't specifically see where there will be dogs or cats in the Holy Bible. I do see where there will be horses, and some other animals are mentioned as well. But my take-home point is death will be no more in the dead judged prophecy, which is in Revelation chapter 20, verses 11 to 15. We see where Jesus throws death into the fiery lake. So death exists no more. What else does it tell us in this new earth prophecy? Neither shall there be anguish, sorrow, and mourning, nor grief, nor pain anymore. Now, how is that possible? How many times have you experienced grief? Just thinking about this week alone, maybe there are many times. And rightfully so. There's a lot of negativity, there are many distressing events, there are many ugly realities that exist in this age, but we have consolations included in this new earth prophecy, words of hope, words of encouragement grounded in reality, grounded in true statements. So the reason that there can be no more anguish, no more sorrow, no more mourning, no more grief, and no more pain. Let me say those things again. My words got a little garbled there. There will be no more death, no more anguish, no more sorrow, no more mourning, no more grief, and no more pain. Six things that are ugly, six things that are upsetting, distressing, negative. Throw in any word that you want that communicates the horror of emotional pain that we are subject to in this age. On the new earth, those things won't exist anymore. We say why and how. In the dead judged prophecy discussed last week and all in the month of May, we learned that Jesus Christ puts many things to a permanent death, the second death. He puts the Antichrist and the false prophet to permanent death. In other words, the second death, they are thrown into the fiery lake. We learn that in verse 20 of chapter 19. The third thing that's put to a permanent death, the second death, is Satan, the devil himself. We learn that in chapter 20, verse 10. The devil is hurled into the fiery lake of burning brimstone. That's the second death. And in the dead judged prophecy, we learn that the rest of the things that must be addressed, that must be abolished so that this new earth may be created, every person who is in sin, every person whose name is not recorded in the Lamb's Book of Life, they are restored to life again. And then that pseudo-death, again, I said the first death is a pseudo-death because it is impermanent. So individuals who have refused to get out of sin, who have refused to get in right standing with God, those individuals have their day in court. That's the great white throne judgment. Their books are read with all their aims, motives, and deeds. The book of life is reviewed to determine whether their name exists there or not. When it's confirmed that their name is not in the Lamb's Book of Life, they are hurled into the fiery lake. So those are four things. And then finally, death itself, as well as Hades, they are thrown into the fiery lake. So at that point, there's no sin that exists on the earth. There's no corruption. There's no evil. At that time, at the conclusion of the dead judge prophecy, we go right into this new earth prophecy. And so God tells us in truth, with confidence, death shall be no more. I'm reading from verse 4 of the new earth prophecy. And death shall be no more, neither shall there be anguish, sorrow, and mourning, nor grief, nor pain anymore, for the old conditions and the former order of things have passed away. So the former order, that's the order we're in presently, that includes death. But in our future, for every person whose name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life, you will become a member of the royal race as evidenced by receipt of your incorruptible, imperishable, glorified body. And you will dwell on the new earth with your God. Let's continue and see what else is shared. What other predictions, consolations, and admonitions are included? Beginning with verse 6, it says, and he further said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty, I myself will give water without price from the fountain springs of the water of life. He who is victorious shall inherit all these things, and I will be God to him. He shall be my son. But as for the cowards and the ignoble and the contemptible and the cravenly lacking in courage and the cowardly submissive, and as for the unbelieving and faithless, and as for the depraved and defiled with abominations, and as for murderers and the lewd and adulterous and the practicers of magic arts and the idolaters, those who give supreme devotion to anyone or anything other than God, and all liars, those who knowingly convey untruth by word or deed, all of these shall have their part in the lake that blazes with fire and brimstone. This is the second death. I want to pause there at verse 8 in the New Earth prophecy. God shares with us again. We already saw in the dead judged prophecy that there is a fiery lake that blazes with fire and brimstone, and that it will blaze with fire and brimstone forever and ever. It is the final location, the final abode for the Antichrist, the false prophet, the devil, Satan himself, death and Hades, as well as any person who elects to reject Jesus Christ, who elects to not experience salvation, in other words, to not get in right standing with God. The only way to do that is to accept the free payment that Jesus made when he died on the cross for you. He paid for all your past, present, and future sins. Sin separates us from God, but through Jesus, the mediator, we're able to get in right standing with God. So it tells us in this New Earth prophecy, this is the second death. So we have, again, a prediction telling us that on this new earth, none of the individuals who were challenged with any or all or some number of these sins will be on the new earth. Well, you say, are you sure? I am absolutely sure, because it is written here clearly for us in black and white in the new earth prophecy. All of these shall have their part in the lake that blazes with fire and brimstone. This is the second death. Okay, so friend, make sure that you decide whether you want to be restored to life again at the time of the second coming or at the time of the great white throne judgment. You can avoid the second death by choosing to experience salvation, by choosing to get in right standing with Jesus Christ. I'm saying the same thing with different words, but it's the same take-home point. There's one choice that allows you to get in right standing with God, and that is having your sin debts paid for, your sins blotted out in your books that are in heaven through you accepting Jesus Christ. He paid for your sin debts. That's the only way to avoid the second death. We learn, Jesus tells us, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Right now, we are in a mortal body. The vestiges of what happened with Adam and Eve were subject to the first death, but we can avoid the second death is the true death. So from my perspective, the first death is a pseudo death. I shared that with you before, and let me say it again. The first death is a pseudo death because every person, with the exception of the Antichrist and false prophet, they experience the second death at the Battle of Armageddon when they are defeated, so they aren't restored to life again. But for every other human being who has experienced the first death, that's you and that's me, we will be restored to life again. In other words, we will be in a physical, tangible body again. So if we're going to be in a physical, tangible body again, and we are, that statement is reliable, worthy of confidence, and true, that means that the first death was simply a pseudo-death. That's why the Bible always refers to the first death as falling asleep. So when you're asleep, you're going to wake up again. You're restored to life again. So every person will be restored to life again. However, one group, that's the wheat. One group, that's the fruit of the earth. One group, those who are in Christ are restored to life again to experience an incorruptible, imperishable, immortal body, restored to life again for the purposes of immortality and dwelling on the new earth. And the other group, the chaff, the tares, the fruit of the vine. In other words, every person who is not in Christ, every person who is under the influence and dominion of Satan, every person who has received the mark of the beast, every person who failed to receive Jesus Christ, at the end of the millennial reign, at the time of the great white throne judgment, those individuals are restored to life again too. So also for those individuals, the first death is a pseudo death. The permanent death is the fiery lake that burns with stone forever and ever. Now, my perception is that the superior choice, the superior decision, is to decide to be restored to life again at time one. However, each gets to decide whether he or she wants to be restored to life again at time one or time two. If you are restored to life again at time two, then you experience the second death, and that also means that you are one or more of these things. a coward, an ignoble, lacking in courage, unbelieving, and or faithless, defiled with abominations. So anytime we have a sin, we're defiled. Individuals who are murderers, adulterers, practicers of magic arts, so that would include astrology, Santeria, psychic activities, and all these counterfeits, things that involve the supernatural, but supernatural from the kingdom of Satan rather than the kingdom of God. So there's no doubt that I personally have sinned. I'm not proud of that, but I must be transparent with myself and with you. Friend, I believe that you have sinned, not on purpose, and perhaps at times on purpose too. None of us is without sin on this earth. That's why we need a Savior. So if you've sinned, that doesn't mean that you are subject to the second death automatically. No, no, no. God knows that you are on this earth where Satan is seeking who he might devour, in other words, who he might take with him to the second death. He knows that that's his final destination, and he wants to take you and me and every person that he can with him, but I am against it. God is against it. I am for you, and God is for you. What does that mean? God has a perfect plan for you to be restored to life again at time one, and when you are restored to life again, you get many things. An exciting thing that you get is you get a glorified, immortal, perfected body that will never, ever, ever die. In this stage of life, death is normal. But God says in 1 Corinthians, death is the last enemy to be subdued and abolished. God doesn't view death, you know, let's say a man dies at 90 or 100 or 120, or a woman dies at 115. God doesn't say, oh, she lived a great life. She accomplished so many things. She did these eight amazing feats. No, God says death is his enemy. Death is her enemy. Death is your enemy, friend, and death is my enemy too. God hates death, and he says it is the last enemy. So God sees death as an enemy, and he is going to destroy death. Jesus Christ is already in possession of the keys to death and Hades, and he is going to abolish death. I talked about that in the month of May. My point that I'm making to you here is that if you have committed any sins, wrongdoings, things that are outside of the will of God, maybe I don't want to get into a list of sins because I'm not here to condemn you, and I'm not here to condemn myself, but there is a penalty for sin, and the way to get all your sin debt paid for is to receive the free gift that Jesus Christ is offering, payment of your sin debt through his works, not yours or mine. We can't work our way into heaven. You can't do 195 amazing things. If you gave $1 billion to your favorite church today, that does not give you an appointment for restoration to life at time one. The only way to get that appointment, and you need that appointment, friend, you need to have your name written in the Lamb's Book of Life. You need to be scheduled to be restored to life again at the time of the resurrection, the second coming. You need to receive your immortal, incorruptible, perfected, glorified body, because that is going to allow you to live on this new earth. That's your choice. I don't get to decide that. Your mother doesn't decide that. Your father doesn't decide that. Your brother, sister, wife, husband, niece, nephew. Your pastor doesn't decide that. Your rabbi doesn't decide that. Your imam doesn't decide that. Don't let anything or any person get in between you and God. Make sure that you are in right standing with God, that your name is written on that Lamb's Book of Life. Let's hear what else is written in the New Earth Prophecy, picking up with verse 9. It says, I'm going to read verses 9 to 21 in the New Earth Prophecy of chapter 21, reading from the Amplified Classic Translation. Let me make sure I'm reading from the right place. Then, and let me back up and say, remember when we looked at the movie trailer, we learned that a key point is the holy city, the New Jerusalem that descends out of heaven. So this is the part of the statement of prophecy that gives us a lot of details about this specific city that will exist on the new earth. That city is the New Jerusalem. It descends out of heaven from God, and it is superimposed onto the new earth. Here's what it says, beginning with verse 1. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls filled with the seven final plagues, afflictions, calamities, came and spoke to me. He said, come with me. I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. Then in the spirit, he conveyed me away to a vast and lofty mountain and exhibited to me the holy, hallowed, consecrated city of Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God. Now, see, we already heard this part, but now we're in the actual movie, right? The continued discussion of the statement of prophecy discussed in the abstract. Okay, so picking up from verse 10, then in the spirit he conveyed me away to a vast and lofty mountain and exhibited to me the holy, hallowed, consecrated city of Jerusalem descending out of heaven from God, clothed in God's glory, in all its splendor and radiance. The luster of it resembled a rare and most precious jewel, like jasper, shining clear as crystal. It had a massive and high wall with 12 large gates, and at the gates there were stationed 12 angels, and on the gates the names of the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel were written. On the east side, 3 gates. On the north side, 3 gates. On the south side, 3 gates. And on the west side, 3 gates. And the wall of the city had 12 foundation stones, and on them the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And he who spoke to me had a golden measuring reed rod to measure the city and its gates and its wall. The city lies in a square, its length being the same as its width, and he measured the city with his reed, 12,000 stadia, about 1,500 miles. Its length and width and height are the same. He measured its wall also, 144 cubits, about 72 yards by a man's measure, of a cubit from his elbow to his third fingertip, which is the measure of the angel. The wall was built of jasper, while the city itself was of pure gold, clear and transparent like glass. The foundation stones of the wall of the city were ornamented with all of the precious stones. The first foundation stone was jasper, the second, sapphire, the third, chalcedony, or white agate, the fourth, emerald, the fifth, onyx, the sixth, sardius, the seventh, chrysolite, the eighth, beryl, the ninth, topaz, the tenth, chrysoprase, the 11th, jacinth, the 12th, amethyst, and the 12 gates were 12 pearls, each separate gate being built of one solid pearl. And the main street, the Broadway of the city, was of gold as pure and translucent as glass. I want to pause there before I read the third and final section in the New Earth Prophecy. Now, God is going to move his abode from heaven to the new earth. And his abode is in this city, the New Jerusalem. So if you were going to get a brand new house and it was amazing and beautiful, you might be excited and like we see in the book of Revelation, you might start listing, oh, the house is 3,500 square feet, and it has an outdoor pool. And on the front, there's a large gate. And when you walk in, you might start to give a lot of details because you're so excited about this amazing house that you are about to live in. And that's what I feel, and maybe you felt it too, when I read that description of the new Jerusalem. God is excited about moving from heaven to earth. He's excited about this new Jerusalem that will continue for the eternities of eternities throughout the ages of the ages on the new earth. And so I have heard many discussions and explanations, and I want to share with you my perspective on this. I believe that this is literal. These are details of an actual city. The specific name of the city is Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem exists today. So there's Jerusalem and New Jerusalem. There's death and there's the second death. So right now we're in the former order of things. In the former order of things, we have Jerusalem as it exists today. But in the new order of things, which begins at the time of the second coming, continues through the millennial reign, continues to the conclusion of the dead judged prophecy up until and beyond the new earth. So that's where we are right now. We are at the time of the new earth, and we have a description of one city, an amazing city, a city that's very important to God. I think it's important for a lot of reasons, but one reason is that's where his physical house, his abode, will be. The throne of God will exist in the new Jerusalem on the new earth. Okay, let us continue. I want to share the last portion of the new earth prophecy, and I am excited to hear your calls and to receive your questions via text. If you have a question about the new earth prophecy, please text it to me at 1-214-505-8719. That's 1-214-505-8719. You can text your question during our live show or at any time. So you can text a question for me, Dr. Nicole, your Book of Revelation research scientist, 24/7. Please text us your questions about the Book of Revelation. Again, our PGN text phone number is 1-214-505-8719. Okay, I want to share the last portion of the New Earth prophecy. It includes some wonderful predictions, consolations, and admonitions for us. So beginning with verse 22 of chapter 21, I saw no temple in the city, for the Lord God omnipotent himself and the Lamb himself are its temple. And the city has no need of the sun nor of the moon to give light to it, for the splendor and radiance, glory of God illuminated, and the Lamb is its lamp. The nations shall walk by its light, and the rulers and leaders of the earth shall bring into it their glory. And its gates shall never be closed by day, and there shall be no night there. They shall bring the glory, the splendor and majesty, and the honor of the nations into it. But nothing that defiles or profanes or is unwashed shall ever enter it, nor anyone who commits abominations, unclean, detestable, morally repugnant things, or practices falsehood, but only those whose names are recorded in the Lamb's Book of Life. I want to pause there before I read the last five verses in chapter 22. Let's look at verse 27 again. But nothing that defiles or profanes or is unwashed shall ever enter it, nor anyone who commits abominations. But only those whose names are recorded in the Lamb's Book of Life. This is telling us that in this city, it is so safe, it is so free of sorrow, grief, pain, and death, that the gates will never, ever be closed. There's never going to be night. It will be perpetually sunny, and it won't be the light of the sun. It will be the light of God. The splendor and radiance of God illuminate the city, and the lamp is its lamp. It's so safe that the gates of the city are never closed. And importantly, only those whose names are recorded in the Lamb's Book of Life ever get to walk in it. Now think about this. If this is the most beautiful city, the most amazing city, and God lives there, I can imagine that every person wants to go there. If someone who was defiled with sin, wrong thinking, wrong motives, wrong behaviors due to the influence of Satan and the curse, that individual would want to go to the city too, right? Who wouldn't want to get to see the most beautiful city that exists? Friend, don't be deceived. Any person with those issues has a different physical location that he or she is dwelling in, and that location is the fiery lake. That's the second death that burns with brimstone, and God confirms to us in the last verse of chapter 21, only those whose names are recorded in the Lamb's Book of Life. So again, make sure that your name is recorded in the Lamb's Book of Life. That entitles you to a number of benefits in our future. One of those benefits, one of many awesome benefits, is that you get to live in an immortal body, your self same body, but perfected, no DNA errors, your same mind, will, and emotions, your same spirit. So you, but the best version of you. That's God's will for you and for me, to live in, as a three-part person in God's will for us, in an immortal body forever and ever on a perfected new earth. Every person who is in right standing with God will be restored to life again, will be victorious, will inherit the new earth. That means you get to live on the new earth in your new, glorified, immortal, incorruptible, imperishable body. Okay. So make sure that you are aware of this reality, that the new earth requires qualification. Not every person is allowed. Specifically, all individuals whose names are not recorded in the Lamb's Book of Life are disallowed to live on the new earth. Finally, in verse 22, we have the last five verses of the new earth prophecy. Reading from the Amplified Classic Translation, then he showed me the river whose waters give life, sparkling like crystal, flowing out from the throne of God and of the Lamb. Through the middle of the broadway of the city, also on either side of the river, was the tree of life with its 12 varieties of fruit, yielding each month its fresh crop. And the leaves of the tree were for the healing and the restoration of the nations. There shall no longer exist there anything that is accursed, detestable, foul, offensive, impure, hateful, or horrible, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall worship him, pay divine honors to him, and do him holy service. They shall see his face, and his name shall be on their foreheads, and there shall be no more night. They have no need for lamplight or sunlight, for the Lord God will illuminate them and be their light. And they shall reign as kings forever and ever through the eternities of the eternities. The end. That's the end of the New Earth prophecy. I hope that it has been a tremendous blessing for you. It is full of predictions, consolations, and admonitions that are reliable, worthy of confidence, and true. I'm so excited about what we are talking about all this month, the New Earth Prophecy. Please join me and us again as we continue to discuss new information and new insights about the New Earth Prophecy. So I hope that this has been a wonderful time for you. It has been fantastic for me. Until next time, friend, goodbye.